You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for December 19th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the floor of the Geneva Convention, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Apology.
Yeah.
For last week's podcast.
We do. We're very sorry.
We.
But it wasn't us. It wasn't. It was the goddamn cats. Is what it was.
It was the cat at the end of last week's show.
Yes.
We made a joke about the internet kitties want to trend on Twitter, so hashtag fuck you Cat Fancy Magazine.
Yes.
And within days, Cat Fancy Magazine went out of business. I didn't even think that was possible.
It did. We killed Cat Fancy Magazine. We did it. We have that kind of power, people. It,
but you know what? It's okay.
Yeah. Because
the Pope said Cat Fancy Magazine's going to heaven.
Or at least the waiting room with highlights and the rest of the
highlights for children, Beavis and Gallant, you know.
That's but apparently it's a very limited superpower. We can put specialty niche magazines that have a very low reader rate out of business.
Let's move on and talk about Cuba Libre. Speaking of the Pope.
Yeah, it's time. Rum and Coke and lime and fire up a Cuba Libre. Cause
apparently the Pope brokered this deal.
Uh-huh.
As popes will do.
You know?
Popes haven't done this for a long time.
No.
It's about time. They got back to stop messing with little boys and started, you know, brokering deals between nations in a good way.
I really want to imagine him as Hyman Roth down in Cuba negotiating,
the Pope.
Yeah.
Like Hyman Roth.
Yeah.
Sitting there with a big birthday cake on the balcony.
Yeah, putting it back together again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's a bag of money on my table, then I'll know I'll have a partner. you know, and this is the business we've chosen.
Yeah.
I just kinda like the idea of the Pope sort of flying in under the radar, Hyman Roth style. And getting in there and undoing 50 years of incredibly bad U.S. foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and
you know, Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio.
Yeah. Two of my favorites.
Must have their panties in a twist about this.
Of course they do.
And
of course
I could just imagine the Pope checking his papal robes for a fuck to give.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Oh, so sorry. You know, I gave all my fucks to the poor. You know.
He does, and he did.
Yeah. He did. And to the little pets that go to heaven, which is a misquote, but who cares? Yeah, I'm sorry. I have no fucks left for you. I'm very sorry.
I have no fucks left to give to you because I gave them all to the poor.
Yeah. Well, and part of me thinks this is an active, you know, that 11-dimensional chess we used to think Barack Obama played. And sometimes he did.
He's trolling the entire Catholic establishment. Absolutely. Well,
he is trolling. The Pope is trolling the Catholic establishment. But I swear, I want to believe that Barack Obama figured, hey, you know what would be the coolest thing in the world? The two craziest fuckers in the entire Republican Party.
Yep.
I'm going to throw napalm on them and watch them go up in flames.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm going to give Ted Cruz all the oxygen he ever wanted.
Yep.
So come on, Ted. Come for me, baby. Come on. Come with your craziest talk. Oh, coddling dictators.
And shit all over the Pope while you're at it.
Yeah. And just go nuts, man.
Yeah.
Just punch yourself out. And you speak for the Republican Party, Ted. You and Marco can become the megaphones. Because who but you, you know, that's on a certain level, it's genius.
Yeah.
That you picked these two guys by your action to turn into the megaphone for the Republican Party. Just as Jeb Bush is starting to go, oh, maybe I want to be president. I don't know. Maybe if he's got those little paper, you know, cootie catchers. One, two, three. Do I want to be president? Oh, it says ask
Facebook
again.
I'm on Facebook, and a lot of people like me, so I guess I'm going to run for president.
Uh-huh. Although I have a theory about that, which I will share with you in a few minutes. But for now, Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio are going to be the talking heads for the Republican Party for the next, I don't know, few days at least, or week at least. And you just gave Ted Cruz new life, which is so beautiful. So,
yep.
Shine on, you crazy diamond.
There you go. I wanted to read something that Nicole Bell, my colleague from Crooks and Liars, wrote on Facebook. Speaking of Facebook, She said, you know, I love Elizabeth Warren as much as the next liberal, but I have to say, number one, I think she could be more effective for the country right where she is in the Senate. Number two, I think liberals are making the same mistake they made in 2008, thinking that a singular executive in the White House will somehow fix everything. And number three, it is uncomfortably rape culture-y to keep hearing liberals say, she really doesn't mean it when she said no, let's force her to run.
Yeah.
Could we stop that, please? And I wrote back and said, you know, this happened with Hillary's supporters, too.
Yeah.
Especially when Hillary lost. It was, and I spoke directly to a Hillary supporter. We had about a 40-minute conversation on the phone about how it's all about how horrible she was treated in the primaries, and isn't it just awful, and Barack Obama's a monster for the way he treated Hillary, and on and on and on. This was at the point when she was already, she'd already been Secretary of State for 18 months.
Right.
And I said, well, you know, she decided to support Obama in the general election. She campaigned for Obama in the general election, and then she became his Secretary of State.
Yeah.
Just I felt like I really needed to say all of that to this person to clarify, you know, she made these decisions to do that.
She's a grown-up.
This person said to me, and I quote, that's beside the point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we get to the point where we dehumanize, and unfortunately it seems to happen particularly with women candidates.
Yeah.
We just dehumanize them, and we make them our children or our dream fulfillers, like our little daughter who's going to become the first woman president, and that's going to be great. And they are there to fulfill our dreams and our wishes and our generational needs rather than be human beings.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Elizabeth Warren might just like the Senate. She might be very suspicious of running for president and how much of an energy drain that would be.
If I had, you know, if she's listening, and you know she is, she listens to the podcast.
We love you, Elizabeth. We just love you. Love you, and, Dr. Warren.
Professor Dr. Warren,
we love you.
Who reminds me eerily of my mom.
She does, doesn't she?
Really she? Does.
She really does. Elizabeth Warren in a few years will be just like your mom. Yep.
Really. And because she's a real, she wear, she, you just see her sort of wearing a sweater and holding
no
it.
No nonsense. Deep as the ocean is blue.
Yes.
And
a born explainer.
Yep, and a born explainer. Just will teach you something just by sitting next to you, right?
And you know it's in your best interest. You know that this is good for you, and she'll explain it in a way that's not scary.
No.
She'll explain it in a way that is
very
sensible,
complimentary. Yeah.
Very complimentary. Very thoughtful. Treats you like a thinking human being, and is good at telling stories. Really is very good at telling stories. And I must add, came from nothing.
Yeah.
You know, is person who rose. On the strength of her capacity, as opposed to any other reason. And I really want to see her in the Senate for the next 25 years.
Yeah.
I really want to see her there. I don't want to see her alone. I don't want to see her stranded an island of liberalism in an ocean of corporate Democrats and shitty Republicans or whatever we see.
And media treating her like shit and making this, you know, she's the liberal Tea Party. Yeah.
Yeah. No, she's not. She's the liberal lion. She's Ted Kennedy. Yeah. I hate to use the analogy, but she really could be that.
She's sitting in his seat. So
And she's really smart enough, and she's really capable of learning really fast. She became a politician, and I mean that in the best possible way, really fast. She learned how to do politics really fast, and she's good at it. And she's smart. She knows her subject matter. She is capable of learning other subject matters equally well. And she's very good at politics. She's very good at the business, the retail business of explaining yourself to people in a way that makes them like you and listen to you. So please, for God's sake, stay in the Senate. Not because if I could clone you and have an Elizabeth Warren in the White House and the Senate, that would be flawed. That would be wonderful. But where I think I'm probably ripping off Charlie Pierce, which is only fair.
Everybody catch that?
Yeah. You don't put a lion into a horse race.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, everybody's jerking off to, oh, what do you think is to happen? I don't know. Hey, you know what would be really cool? Let's pay attention to politics right now. Mm-hmm. Let's focus on what's happening right now as opposed to what might happen in an imaginary horse race among the horses that haven't been picked yet 2 years from now. How about we do that? And Elizabeth Warren is a solid anchor for the party.
Yep.
And you and I both noticed this in the last week or so, and I really did notice this with a Michael Gerson column, about which I will write if I have a little bit of time. They are pairing her up with Ted Cruz.
God.
Republicans are pairing her off with Ted Cruz, and the ones who are pairing her off with – because she's the liberal populist. Because there is this binary vocabulary. There must be one on each side. And by the way, Nate Silver,
mm-hmm.
I'll tell you later on during this conversation, or maybe during a private conversation between just you and I, proved me right again. Proved both sides are bullshit. He didn't even mean to do it today, but he did it. And I'll tell you about that in a little while.
Okay.
But
everybody wants to hear that. So you're going to tell it on the podcast. You can't you might as well just do it right now. Do it now. Go ahead.
No, I want to talk about Elizabeth Warren.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Stay on topic.
Michael Gerson.
For once.
there is only ramble at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So Michael Gerson wrote a column in which he basically said, well, it's populism is all well and good, but we need practical leadership. You know, we need people to he laid out the Congress is broken. There's this institution called Congress, and it's broken. And isn't it sad how broken it is? And we need to acknowledge it's broken. We need to recognize that it's broken. Okay, great. My question to you, Michael Gerson, is, okay, how did it get broken?
Yeah.
And on that subject, every Republican is silent as the tomb.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're not going to talk about how this place got broken. It just is. Some force, something happened. We don't know. There's no record of it. It's all been lost in a fire. But at some point, somebody broke into Congress and fucked it all up. And we need to fix it now. And the problem is we have populists on the left and we have populists on the right. Like Ted Cruz on the right. And Elizabeth Warren on the left, which is, you know, a little bit more interesting, and she has some more stuff, but really...
Do you remember that Democrat, Driftglass, that Democrat who filibustered his own bill?
Yeah, no.
No, you don't, because there wasn't one.
No, there was no such person.
But the Senate Majority Leader did it.
Yes, he did.
The current Senate Majority Leader filibustered his own bill to block anything from happening in the U.S. Senate.
Do you remember that Democratic Speaker of the House that taught all Democrats to call Republicans traitors all the time?
No, because there wasn't one.
Oh, there wasn't one. That's right.
That was Newt Gingrich, who was also pushed out of his position in the House due to a sex scandal.
And then pushed back into the spotlight because he's Newt Gingrich and, you know, he's good on camera. Who was the Senate Democrat who blocked every single bill a president tried to promote, no matter what it was, even if it was for crippled veterans?
Yeah, with a crippled veteran of the Senate, both a veteran and a veteran of the Senate sitting right in front of him.
Begging them
to pass it. Yeah.
None of this has ever happened before.
Both
Michael Gerson, who's a George Bush speechwriter, mm-hmm. can't say that. He can only sort of take as a fact, a fact of nature, Congress has somehow got broken. We need to fix it. And you will notice in all these articles that we need a compassionate guy, a practical guy, somebody who can be, you know, who can take that populism but really sort of work into a practical program of solutions, like, say, Jeb Bush.
Yeah. I have never, ever, ever seen media fawning this week like this stuff that's going on with Jeb Bush.
Yeah. And it's all from the same no labels.
No labels, people. It's no Bush. Labels one after another. Every day is great news for Jeb Bush.
Yeah.
No matter what.
No labels, people, are the shadow cabinet, are the shadow government for the Bush family. They've been waiting out there for their chance to come back to power.
Yep. And I saw a headline over at Alan Combs' website. John Huntsman claims Jeb Bush evokes GOP nostalgia. And it's those moments when I pee in my pants and barf a little in my mouth at the same time.
So I'll tell you what.
But you know where he said that? You'll never guess.
Politico?
Morning Joe.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's Politico with, you know, animated.
Animated, that's all that Politico. Is. It's Morning Joe. That's why I can't watch it.
They bring on Jim. Look, it's Jim Vanderhaar. Hey, everybody.
I can't watch that. I just can't watch it anymore.
Hey, it's Harold Fraud Jr. Hey, everybody. I know. You know what I do? I just watch the Twitter stream.
Yeah. Well, that's entertaining, at least.
It really is. It's just all these people going, I can't fucking believe this hypocrite has a goddamn, the best paying job at MSNBC, apparently, is given to this buffoon, this wannabe Bill O'Reilly, who's got everything wrong, who is just a joke. And he brings on this cast of waxworks dummies and
you're absolutely right, Joe.
You're so right, Joe. And they're all the same kind. You know, the Democrats are all Harold Fraud Jr.
Yeah.
And the Republicans are all Joe and his friends.
Mm-hmm.
And the political wisdom is all the crap that comes oozing out of Politico during the night. And it's on for 3 goddamn hours every morning. We get prison on weekends from MSNBC because they have literally nothing else to talk about. But somehow they can afford to carve out 3 hours for a Republican hack to talk during morning drive, during the morning hour, to talk about whatever the hell is on his mind. And believe me, it is a nightmare to watch your liberal TV, liberal TV.
And let's face it, it's to make Citibank happy, which apparently everything is to make Citibank happy.
Yeah.
I want to talk just for a second about the Cromnibus bill.
Yeah, the reach around.
We didn't get a chance to talk about this last Friday because we had recorded before all of this kind of unfolded.
This is the Citibank reach around amendment, right?
Yeah, the Citibank reach around amendment. But I think of it, we've talked so many times about space merchants.
Yeah.
On the show.
Yes, absolutely.
We actually do have a congressman from Citibank.
We do. We really do.
He doesn't have to run for anything, but he gets to put stuff in bills. He gets to whip the Congress. He gets to make phone calls to congressmen and demand that they vote for this. He gets to do everything a congressman does, and he doesn't have to run or fundraise. So
he's got all the money in the world, and
right.
And he's got a job for life as long as he puts his pawns and his knights on the board correctly.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
And he
got to get the money out of politics. I don't know how we're going to do it. We got to do it. And did you notice Nicholas Confessori from the New York Times on Up with Steve Kornacki last weekend?
Actually,
you had said something brilliant about him. I know you noticed.
I did.
Yes, you did.
I was drunk.
Because he's a young writer for the New York Times. And he kept talking about, Citibank spent all this political capital on the Hill to get this amendment in the Cromnibus bill.
Right.
And you said, political capital? They've got actual capital.
Which they have an unlimited supply.
They never have to worry about depleting their political capital. Who cares?
Yeah, that's God, I was brilliant.
You were that was brilliant. Who needs political capital? That's what you spend when you don't have any actual capital. And Citibank has now pretty much put federal government fines into their budget every year to just pay it off. Just pay
the price of doing business,
pay it, whatever. You know, we're going to have to pay fines for the next, 50 years because this is how we do business. This is now. And there are people on Wall Street, this is hilarious, who are alarmed by this. Say, you can't run a business with fines for breaking the law in some sort of unlimited way of, we know we're probably going to have to pay another, $4 billion in fines, and we'll write off this part of it, and we'll write off this part, and we'll put this as future losses. And, they're playing with all of this bookmaking bullshit.
Yeah.
To factor it into their profit loss statement for their stockholders. And people are wondering out loud whether this makes Citibank a bad investment because, it's uncertainty. How much fines will they have? Well, we'll just put it in here as, future losses. And it apparently is tax deductible.
The markets don't like uncertainty. Yeah, that's why we don't put people in jail at all.
Right, exactly.
I don't know why Cheney's not in jail, because I don't know what he has to do with the markets. But apparently there's just – not apparently. There clearly is a class of people who are above the law.
Yep. And Cheney the bankers at Wall Street are two groups that are just above the law.
Just above the law. And now we all know it.
And now, white police officers in black neighborhoods. Just above the law.
Above the law.
And that's got to change. That's really got to change.
It's part of me is delighted that it's so clear now.
Yeah.
But part of me is keenly aware that it doesn't, that we have an entire political party that's immune to reason now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you can't reason with them anymore. You can't point to something as obvious as torture is bad and not get a fucking argument from half of the Republican Party. And the other half just looks at their shoes and waits for the conversation to stop because they don't want to get beat up by Rush Limbaugh. Mm-hmm. So you have...
And getting beat up by Rush Limbaugh is worse than losing the presidential election 6 out of the last 7 or 8 times.
Yeah. So either... Yeah. Torture is virtuous and good, which is basically the Fox argument, the Rush Limbaugh argument.
Well, and or, because the media is so pathetic on this issue and makes it a both sides issue, the polls, uninformed voters in the polls say, yeah, well, 9/11, you know, yeah, we probably had to torture, probably did.
And if you slip past the that fire barrier, that Limbaugh fire barrier, the secondary line of defense is the David Brooks. Well, you know, drones.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you know, that's
what a pussy says.
I listened to 3 different people make the Gretchen Carlson argument came out of David Brooks's mouth. I think also Michael Gerson's mouth, but another Republican. Just someone is handing them out. You know, here's what you say if someone asks you, why aren't you in favor of putting Cheney in prison for fucking torturing people? The answer is, hey, look at those drones over there. Yeah. You know, morality is very slippery stuff. It's very, you know, people do bad things. And I will remind the longtime listener that I was at the David Brooks lecture at the, I mentioned before a few times, at the Hammerschmidt Chapel. And I recorded a video of him lying about his work and lying about his positions on the war in Iraq because it was inconvenient for him to have those things. But one of the other things he had said during that was, when confronted directly with the complete and utter failure of Iraq, he said, yeah, but, you know, the stimulus failed too. And so, you know, both sides do things that don't work. His immediate reaction is to quickly shunt any responsibility taking onto something some liberal might have done or some Democrat might have done somewhere. It's never, I was wrong. Yep. I screwed up. It's, oh, golly, there are probably – and he is that completely morally bankrupt. That he is that rich, that powerful, and when directly confronted with his own failure, his own mistakes, his immediate reaction is, shit, can't I blame someone else for this?
Yep.
He's a fucking coward. David Brooks is a goddamn fucking coward.
Absolutely.
And he hides behind, and he is representative of that second tier Republican Party. That there are people who just say, yeah, torture, screw it. Yeah, I love that. The idea of some guy getting the hell beat out of him, Dick Cheney beating up some guy in a basement with a claw hammer gets me hard.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Those are the people in the GOP who I really do believe are beyond redemption. And that's the core. That's the fucking base. But that there's that shell around them, that reasonable shell. And that David Brooks shell that will never say torture is good. He'll just say, well, you know, liberals are just as bad. And that's the place we have to go. Should I talk about Nate Silver?
Yes, please. Talk about Nate Silver.
There's Nate Silver. I just caught a glimpse of this graph that he did that shows where conservatives are on the spectrum over time. And it's this sort of long, sinuous, snaky thing going from Chris Christie on the left, sort of, to Barry Goldwater and Rand Paul. But it's a ranking of, let's say, 0 to 100. But what's... And he says, and this is based on a compilation of voting records and fundraising and a bunch of other things that were factors we've all factored into. But what was fascinating was not the curve of the dots, the scatter chart. What was fascinating was he plotted on the chart where the average Republican was in like 1983 and where the average Republican is now. And unless you're looking for it, it sort of goes unnoticed. But that's the thing. The baseline of what it means to be a conservative has shifted, I think, 20 points to the right in the last 20 years. He doesn't go back to the 70s because it would be way the fuck
over. Oh, yeah. But, you remember how liberal Nixon was on social issues and welfare and absolutely just
wage and price control.
Right.
Environmental, the OSHA, you name it. I mean, Rick Per
EPA.
Book. Rick Perlstein's book Nixon Land, you know, quoting Nixon, if the job number is down, build some bridges,
build some roads, build a dam. Yep.
Yeah. And
federal government spending to fix the economy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it looked for all the world, if you are reductive about it, and I, of course I am, because it makes me look good. I did this little hand-drawn graph based on my impressions of life in politics and reading the 1972 platform of the Democratic Party.
Uh-huh, I remember you doing that. That was a while ago.
It was, but it's exactly the same fucking graph. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Nate Silver has numbers and a lot of scattered dots all over his, but it amounts to the same thing. It's if you really believe that center is the place to be, you have to believe that as the Republican Party has been moving hard right, the Democratic Party must have been moving the same amount left.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
nope.
And they haven't. The Democratic Party's been moving right the whole time. So the idea that there's this center, there's this place in the middle, and you can stay there because both sides have the extremes that have moved in equally and opposite direction at the same time, is simply bullshit. The Republican mm-hmm. Party has statistically, according to Mr. Silver, moved way the fuck to the right since Reagan. And go take a look at the Democratic platform in 1972 and compare it to the party today. The DLC Clinton era party of today.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. and sorry, no. Now, of course, that proof is useless on its face because no one's going to listen to it. No one's going to sit still for that argument, except for a liberal and our listeners who are very kind and delightful. So should I move on to doom?
Go ahead. You're on a roll. You told to me about this at lunch and I was kind of blown away by it.
Well, this is
Jeb Bush and science fiction together again.
It's worlds colliding, people.
Worlds colliding.
Jeb Bush is what was the article you were quoting about nostalgia?
Yeah, John Huntsman claims Jeb Bush evokes GOP nostalgia.
Yes, the good old days.
I loved what Andy Borowitz said. He said Dick Cheney ready to serve as Jeb Bush's president.
He stands ready. Well, now that he's immortal. Yeah. For those of you who are not science fiction fans, there's a guy named Frank Herbert who's long since deceased, and he wrote a book called Dune. He wrote a lot of science fiction, but his most famous book is Dune. And for those of you who are science fiction fans, you're already like 50 pages ahead of me. So you just keep going. But Dune is a desert planet that is very clearly supposed to be the Middle East. It is the only place in the universe that spice is created. And spice is this mystical, powerful substance created by sandworms and the special environment on this planet. And it makes interstellar travel possible. It's the only place that it happens. So it's the most valuable real estate in the universe. It's also the harshest and most brutal environment in the universe. And mining spice makes you rich. And it's the story of these warring houses, these ancient hereditary houses. And it's the House Atreides and the House Harkonnen. The Harkonnens are the bad guys. And the Harkonnens have taken Dune. They own the planet. The planet's called Arrakis, but everyone calls it Dune. And they own it. And the Baron, who's this grotesque, monstrous, evil, sadistic bastard, has a plan for how he's going to most efficiently crush the will of the people of the planet, get them on his side. And his plan is, first, I send in my bad son. my bad son is called the Beast. I forget what his name is in the book, but it's the Beast Raban. And he's brutal and sadistic, and he tortures people, and he's just a fucking monster. He tear asses all over the place, and he breaks the will of the populace, except he doesn't realize that the populace is much bigger than he anticipates. But the plan is, once the bad brother has broken their fucking will, he'll send in the good brother, Fayed, mm-hmm. who is charming and intelligent and is much more subtly
sadistic. But they're all both in service to the same power. It doesn't matter.
It's the House Harkonnen they're serving. So the idea is send in bad brother to completely demoralize and wipe the population's will, crush it. And then send in the good brother to act as the savior, mm-hmm. who's only going to save you from what the bad brother did.
Which is Jeb Bush is supposed to be. Yeah,
Jeb
sure.
Bush is going to come in and save us from the shit that George Bush left burning on the White House lawn. No, he's not.
No.
He's a Bush.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, on the subject of Bush.
Yeah.
I would really like people to shut the fuck up about dynasties when they talk about Clinton.
Yeah, yeah.
Clinton Bush. I mean, this is a, and I'm sorry, this goes out to Glenn Greenwald too. You know, this just, it just, if we have a Hillary versus Jeb fight, it just proves everything about the basic corruption and immorality of our dynastic system. Let me explain something to you. The Bush family has been in politics since Prescott Bush got cozy with the Nazis way back in the 20s and 30s. All right. They have four generations of people who have been active in politics or in the White House. I believe George Bush's son or Jeb Bush's son was recently elected in Texas. That's four generations of Bush who have successfully fucked this country up for generations. That's a dynasty. A husband and wife are not a dynasty. Bill Clinton did not have a daddy who was president. Bill Clinton did not have a granddaddy who was a powerful senator. Neither did Hillary. Bill Clinton came from nothing. And Hillary Clinton was a smart and is a smart woman who married a smart man and had political ambitions of her own and would have excelled at being Hillary Clinton no matter what or who she was married to. So this idea of I am very uncomfortable about refighting the fights of the 60s. I really want to get over that. But the idea that Hillary Clinton might be the candidate doesn't prove anything about dynasties. I think I remember who – I can't remember who said it, but come to me when Chelsea's grandkid is running for president, and then we'll talk about dynasties.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a dynasty when it's a husband and a wife who are both smart and politically engaged and politically savvy. Nobody gave Clinton anything, and people have been giving the Bushes everything for three generations.
Well, and just, you would argue then that the Kennedys were a dynasty at that point.
Oh, yeah. Of course they were. And the Roosevelts are a dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
Hell,
mm-hmm.
I remember I'm from Chicago.
Yeah,
the Dailies are a dynasty.
The Rockefellers are a dynasty. Yeah,
the Madigans in the state of Illinois are a dynasty. The Illinois politics is full of dynasties, and you can mm-hmm. spot them right away. They're just, as I've said before, get a copy of Boss by Mike Royko,
mm-hmm.
and you read, it's from 1970, I think. All the names are the same.
Yeah.
Same families are running all the same power levers in Illinois and have been for generations. Mm-hmm. That's a dynasty. Mm-hmm. Clintons aren't a dynasty. Clintons are something. And part of what they are makes me deeply uncomfortable because they're mm-hmm. way too cozy selling
with
out
Wall
people
Street.
Like me.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
They're,
yep.
And they've proven they're willing to throw liberal values under the bus to mm-hmm. accommodate centrists, to
gain power. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And it makes me very uncomfortable. But the one thing they're not is a dynasty yet. They could very well be, but they're not yet. Until, you know who's a dynasty? Luke Russert's a dynasty.
He's a dynastic son, just so you know. Mm-hmm. I've had a tough week in having to watch news about Pakistan.
Yeah.
And I just want to say how sad I am about that.
Yeah.
It sometimes seems like the world values might over kindergartners.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. And I want to.
And that's true in Connecticut as well as Pakistan.
Mm-hmm. And I do want to say part of the reason I love my wife is that she gets sad over all the right things.
Thank you.
She gets upset over all the right things. You want to take a break, Tom?
Nope, I'm all right.
Okay.
I'm all right. Yeah. No,
your reaction is the only honest one. It's horrifying and it's tragic. And there's nothing to do but cry.
Yep. And I cry for Ferguson, too. I cry for the Black sons and the college-age daughters who have to go, who are sent to school to learn and have to be given a conversation about how to stay safe on campus. We have to have conversations with our daughters. And that's not limited to one race of daughters either.
No.
If you go to a party, take a friend, only have two drinks, make sure you pour the drink, make sure, you know, on and on and on.
And let's be clear that the reason that we have to have conversations with our daughters is people aren't having conversations with their son.
Right.
These are men who are doing it.
Yeah.
Let's be very clear about that.
Yeah,
it's not,
right. And that, you're right. And that is true. And we're not having conversations with white police forces about how to behave and when lethal force is necessary.
Yep.
Believe it or not, we're preparing our kindergartners. We have lockdowns in schools.
Yeah, we do.
Instead of telling the goddamn NRA to stuff it, not that that would save everyone from a crazy person, but it might save 10 kindergartners. It might have saved 50 kindergartners that day at Sandy Hook. And I am grateful that the United States Senate did tell the NRA to stuff it this week.
Mm-hmm.
And they did confirm Barack Obama's Surgeon General.
The communist, the noted communist. Yeah.
who believes, as every pediatrician that my children have seen in the past 16 years, that a gun in a home is a health hazard for a child.
Right.
All right. I want to end.
I'd like to add one thing. There's a logic to the NRA position, just as there's a logic, a perverse logic, to the position on torture, just as there's a perverse logic to the position of cops killing kids, which is the minute any of them admit that they're even a chance that they're wrong, their entire argument unravels.
Yeah.
So they have no choice but to go crazier
deeper
and double down. And so Dick Cheney goes on Meet the Press and basically says, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit. You know, because what his alternative is, I'm a monster.
Yeah.
I should be in prison. Because those are the only two choices.
Mm-hmm.
The only two choices the NRA believes it has is everybody armed to the teeth all the time because Barack Obama is coming for your guns. Or, holy shit, we're arming a generation of lunatics and teaching them to shoot at each other.
Yep.
And encouraging that behavior by our rhetoric. We're lighting a fuse and pretending the bomb is someone else's problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't admit that because the next phrase out of their mouth would have to be, I heartily apologize for shitting on the planet on which I live and ruining the lives of so many people. I will go away now and you will never see me again. And those people never, ever, ever, they can't stand it. The withering effect of facing who they are and what they believe would destroy them. So they're fighting like hell to keep the system from putting a mirror up to them and making them look at who they are. And that's where they get aided and embedded by Morning Joe and David Brooks, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
So...
This letter from listener Tom, we're going to move on. I'd like you to read the letter, and then I'll read my reply, and then you read his reply. This is sort of housekeeping for a future episode, but I did want to get this in. So would you read the letter from listener Tom, please?
Listener Tom writes, I'm a little behind in my podcast, so just yesterday I listened to episode 258. Wait, that's my prawn. I'm totally confused. It's from November 14th. I'm totally confused. Around 39 minutes in, there's this big discussion about the question Chuck Todd won't ask, but nobody ever says what the question is. I assumed I just missed it since it was on the train going to work, where I always listen to you. Good for you. However, I rewound and couldn't find it. First of all, if you're rewinding, you have a tape recorder, and you really should upgrade your technology there.
Yeah, I think he just went back on his digital thingy.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Am I clueless or was there an editing mistake? Tom.
So I wrote back to him and I said, I'm not sure, but the question that Chuck Todd won't ask is essentially, since the Republican Party has lost its mind, why do we continue to pretend that both sides? And why do we pretend that they can govern? It's along those lines, and we may have been speaking a little shorthand. That happens from time to time, and we'll be more careful now that you mention it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tom replied. You want to read that?
Sure. Tom says, I think new listeners would have an easier time getting into the podcast if there was less of an assumption that they were familiar with the common themes of the show. Who is David Brooks? The Republicans have gone crazy. What both sides do it means and why is it a lie, etc. Maybe once a year you should do a pro-left 101 show to help assimilate new listeners. Happy holidays. And Tom adds, I use the term assimilate not as a reference to the Borg, but Driftglass can read it that way if he chooses. And of course I did, because I'm a very bad person.
Of course you did.
Yes.
We have our 5th anniversary episode in January, Drift Class.
What?
Did you know that? Years of
five
podcasting.
5 long years? Holy crap.
You believe it? I can't believe it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I think Pro Left 101 is a great idea for our fifth anniversary episode. But I'd also like to hear from anyone else that has any other ideas of what they'd like to hear for our fifth anniversary show. Yeah. As long as you don't make me go back as Kevin Holtzinger did.
Uh-huh.
He took all of our ers and ahs and ums that were all you and I agreeing with one another and strung them together and stopped after 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's 6 minutes of this.
Yes.
I won't put anyone through it, but
so
I did realize when I was editing last week's show that I said quite a bit, and I just was too tired to edit them out. But
well, let's be clear, Kevin. I challenge you to go back and pull all the – I agree with you completely, Ed, from the Ed Schultz show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I agree with you entirely, Chris.
Yes, more. No, no, don't make him do that.
Yeah, I think you'd get at least –
Oh, yeah, but that would minutes. Be – that would be – you know, Comedy Central should do that.
Yeah.
They've got paid interns or unpaid interns to go through and all the times that – Yeah, right, Joe. On the Morning Joe show. Yeah, would be.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. You said it perfectly, Joe.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
See, we are agreeing with each other. Thank you, Kevin. Now it's in my head. I can't get it out.
He's going to agree with me for the rest of the night.
Yeah.
All right. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listener. This week's internet kitty is Callie. And it'll look in the picture like Callie's head has been shoved through a piece of white bread. That's because she's wearing white bread around her face. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford an espresso beverage for yourself, buy one for us with a $5 contribution to our show. You can do this at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where there is a PayPal button, or you can mail us a letter. And the address, again, is at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com.
Oh, and we have a Twitter account now.
We have a Twitter account right now. Yes, we do. And all we do there is tweet the show. If you just need a Twitter reminder of the show, you can follow @ProLeftPodcast on Twitter. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher. And thank you for doing that. We deeply appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, and write to both of us at that same address. Write us about anything, but especially about what you want to hear on our fifth anniversary episode. We love hearing from you.
We do.
Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Merry Christmas! God bless you! Uh-huh. Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties are hoping their mojo continues.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
All right, Science Fiction University, Magnolia E Publishing, late today sent us this set of six movies, for which he has 3 clips per movie.
Ah.
These are, I think you would consider them all science fiction movies, I believe.
And I am a snob, so let's be clear.
Well, you do have a definite definition for what a work of science fiction is. Would you like to remind people what your definition of science fiction is?
If you remove the science, there ain't no story.
Okay.
It can be any
Pretty
kind
simple.
Of science. It can be any kind of science, though.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have alternate history. That'd be time travel altering the past. It can be psychological science. It can be all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But if you pull that central scientific concept out and the story falls apart. Also, it should be predicated on what if.
Okay. It should be predicated on what if.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, here is the first set of 3 clips. See if you can guess this movie.
All right.
I'll just die if I don't get this recipe.
She cooks as good as she looks, Ted.
You see, Ed hated tennis, but he never said a word. All he wanted to do was to please me. Well, I want to please him now. And boy, am I ever going to.
That would be the Stepford Wives.
That's right, the Stepford Wives.
A genuinely, I suppose at the time, terrifying and now hilarious, although becoming more and more relevant. It's weird how it's coming around to relevance again now that we have a Republican Party that looks back at that with nostalgia.
All right, number two.
We're the extra fuel they might need, Stanton. The new world isn't for us. It's for the young.
There's an opening. There go the engines.
I'll bring it around to try to glide in.
You can take the ship, sure. Then what? Only 40 of you can get away. Don't you see? Then the rest of us will get rid of that 40 and the next 40 until we kill each other.
That's when worlds collide.
Yes, that's when World Collides, 1951. Did you saw that movie, did you?
I did. Me and my friends used to crack wise about it being only 2 days away when we were in high school. I don't know why we latched onto that particular movie to partially memorize and goof on, but it was a fun one. There was a show called Family Classics when I was a kid in the greater Chicago area that had Sunday afternoon shows. And they did a lot of science fiction. They did a fair business in science fiction. And I think When Worlds Collide was one of them. So.
All right. Number three.
I'm crazy about you.
It's a secret. That's the girl I'm going to marry.
Michael Anthony Brace!
What's the brainstorm project, Alex?
Brainstorm? I don't know.
You don't know? Have you seen my kid? They can't stop him shaking.
Oh. All right, that's Christopher Walken.
It is Christopher Walken.
I can tell you that right now. And I'll tell you that, something else I know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's not The Dead Zone.
Okay.
It's also not Pulp Fiction.
No, it's not Pulp Fiction.
And that's where my... I have no idea. It's Christopher Walken in science fiction. And it's the one with what's his name where they go underground in a bomb shelter. They come up in modern times. I think...
No, I don't...
Sissy Spacek is a wife in that. But it's not that one either. I don't know what it is. That's my way of saying I don't know what it is.
It's a movie called Brainstorm.
Oh.
1983. It was Christopher Walken, you're right, and Cliff Robertson.
Oh, really?
Louise Fletcher, and it was Natalie Wood's last movie.
Oh, my.
And it was directed by Douglas Trumbull.
Dalton Trumbull?
Douglas Trumbull.
Okay. Not Dalton Trumbull.
Then. No, Douglas Trumbull. And it was a team of scientists invent a brain-computer interface that allows sensations to be recorded from a person's brain and converted to tape so others can experience them.
Oh.
One team member has sexual intercourse while wearing the recorder and shares the tape with other colleagues. Of course he does.
Yeah, yeah. We have a device for that now. It's called the internet.
One of his colleagues splices one section of the tape into a continuous orgasm, which results in sensory overload.
I would have gone with, he records someone as they die.
Ooh.
And then it becomes fatal.
Mm-hmm.
Aha, uh-huh, see what I did there?
That sounds very Edgar Allan Poe. That's what Edgar Allan Poe would do with that script.
Yeah, he would.
All right. This one is number four.
I am the owner of this domain.
You are also the murderer of my husband.
I claimed my rights.
Could a rock from Iceland possibly pop out of a volcano across the world?
I needed food, so I took it. Professor, tell your man to calm himself. I'm not in the mood to engage in a dispute about a slaughtered duck. Professor!
Oh, that's easy.
It is?
That's Journey to the Center of the Earth.
That's right.
James Mason.
With James Mason. All right.
Put James Mason anywhere, and he's still James Mason.
Number five.
Listen, Mona, this banana paste is meant for your survival only. Besides, I just gave you some.
Max, say anything to me, please. For God's sake, talk to me, say anything. Talk to me, say anything. Please, God, say anything, Max. My God.
From what I see from my videotape, it was manned by some animated beings, obviously from some planet other than Mars.
Hell if I know. I can tell you one thing for sure. That's the mayor of Quahog there. That's young Adam West, who's got a
It
fine
is Adam West. Press. He's in this movie for a hot minute.
It's unmistakable. That voice is absolutely unmistakable. But I have no idea what that is.
Listen, Mona, this banana paste is for your survival only. It's Robinson Crusoe on Mars. Mona is the chimpanzee. Of course, you have to have a chimpanzee in your spaceship when you land on Mars. And Mona discovers an underwater spring on Mars, the chimpanzee does. Underwater spring on Mars with banana sausages in the water.
Wow.
Or something.
That prefigures
sausage
the
plants. That's what it is. Sausage plants.
That prefigures the homoeroticism of Batman by several years. There's a cave.
I thought you were going to be talking about the orgasm splice.
No. There's a cave with a bunch of bananas in it.
Listen, two guys. It's late here, people.
But they're not
listen,
gay.
Listen, Mona. These banana sausages are for your survival only. All right.
In my pants.
All right. Number six.
We're now in the atmosphere of Earth. Your plane is where you left it in the cargo hold.
And these are portraits of Exeter and Brack.
Do you notice the peculiar indentations in both their foreheads?
Coincidental, no doubt.
Cooperate voluntarily. If you do, I give you my word that you will not be harmed or your minds changed in any way.
You defy the monitor.
I already have.
Do you believe him, Cal?
In this place, I wouldn't believe my grandmother.
Oh, that's This Island Earth.
That's This Island Earth. That's the one that they made the MST3K movie.
Yes, they did.
Out of very good. All right.
Very fine movie. And that's probably the only reason I know it. It is possible that I saw Robinson Crusoe on Mars at a science fiction convention when I was very, very intoxicated in the movie suite at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
There are many movies I'm sure I've seen that way that I have no recollection of whatsoever. But I doubt it.
All right. Moving on. And thank you very much. Thank you. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Thank you, Magnolia E-Publishing.
Yeah.
For providing us with these cool clips. We much appreciated. All year round. Oh, that's right. I was going to read or science fiction bands.
Oh, you were going to read your science. Oh, okay. Do you want to do that? Do you have your tweets? Because my tweets didn't win and neither did yours.
Mine didn't win?
No.
I've been waiting by the phone all day.
They weren't finalists because I already checked the Tumblr for At Midnight to find out. But yes, At Midnight on Tuesday night this week had science fiction bands as their hashtag wars.
Right.
And I did Motley Crue of the Enterprise.
Nice.
And Spock Around the Clock.
Oh, very nice.
And I can't remember any.
Metallica. You did it Metallica.
No, that was on the show. I hadn't seen the show when I saw the hashtag come up on Twitter. Mm-hmm. But that is the definitive one. And that was the one they used on the show, which was Battlestar Metallica. Yeah.
See, you're as funny as Chris Hardwick.
So I'm as funny as any writer on Chris Hardwick's show. That's true.
You are. You really are.
Okay.
The Demolished Manfred Mann.
That's pretty good.
The Ones Who Walk Away from Almost Los Lobos. I like that one. Mm-hmm. All You Rob Zombies.
Well, I see that's my favorite right there.
Yeah.
Right there, that's my favorite.
That's a Heinlein story. All You Zombies. All You Rob Zombies. You got to really know your science fiction to do this. I mean,
you can't just use the easy ones. Star Trek, I use the easy ones, but.
Well, I did skim through them. I noticed that 80% of them, 90% of them were Star Trek or Star Wars or science fiction movies after 1995, give or take. Movies, nothing, you know, no novels, they're just all movies. And that's fine. It's a fun show. And it is
a fun show. And
shouldn't have
the idea that they have audience participation on this level is really fun.
It's a blast. And they should not have to suffer some curmudgeon like me going, you know what, Hugo Gernsback, I got funny one a joke about Hugo Gernsback. Yeah, shut up, old man. All right, so the next one is Game of Rat and Dragon, but rat is spelled with two T's.
Yeah.
Rat the band, the heavy metal band. I like this one. This is my favorite. Jeffy is Maroon 5.
Ah, that's
Arlen Ellison's story. Yeah. And I kind of like this one too. Bears discover Earth, Wind, and Fire. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I got one more. The Three Stigmata of Robert Palmer.
Ooh.
Yeah, see, yeah, think about it, people.
Because I just found them on the comedycentral.tumblr.com.
Uh-huh.
The ones that I liked.
Yeah.
Don't Panic at the Disco. That's a very good one.
That's very good.
Death Star for Cutie.
Nice.
That one, that's nice.
Totally vote for that.
Hal and Oates.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Morris Day and the Time Space Continuum.
That's nice. All good. They're good.
Slaughter Folds 5.
Very good.
I can't
fault any of these people. They're all good.
Slaughter Folds 5 came from Frank Conniff of MST3K. So you got there. That's pretty cool. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Frank. But I still think Bears Discover Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Bears Discover Earth, Wind, and Fire is pretty good.
The Three Stigmata of Robert Palmer are pretty good.
Pretty good.
Give me a gentleman B on that.
Maybe someday we'll get some credit over here, Chris Hardwick.
Chris Hardwick. You know, we watch you in Flyover Country, Chris Hardwick.
We're the two people who don't change the channel after Colbert. We're the TV set that doesn't do that. All right.
We've been fanning you since the Terminator days, Chris Hardwick. You were the nerd in Terminator 3, I think.
We got to get on with the meat of our podcast, unless you want to just stop here.
No. If you don't eat your meat, how can you have any science fiction?
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Love you.
Bye.
Love you. Bye.